Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
Up, sodomites, and welcome to the Sinister Sissies podcast, your guide to true crime, horror, and everything man on man and macabre. I'm Jared, your master of depravity, and I am looking at the video transmitted shaven face and hair of my dirty, filthy little slave, Sam.
I could say the same thing, although, yeah, I'm the slave, so I don't get to call you my slave, but we can change it up every now and again, can't we?
Yeah, we can. No, you're shaved for me. I've shaved myself, yes, you're yes, shaved sir. For me. That's how this works.
I understand, sir.
Things are going to get a bit spooky today, which is always a bit of fun. The topic for today's podcast is filmmaker and occultist and novelist Kenneth Anger. Born under the name Kenneth Angelmeyer, was born in Southern California in 1927. He grew up in a fairly rich, well-off family that had connections to Hollywood, and the best indication of that is he actually played a child prince in a 1935 film version of A Midsummer Night's Dream. He began making films from a young age. In fact, his first film was made when he was only 11 years old, although I'm assuming it didn't have the themes that his later films would have. I don't know.
Look, I don't know. I heard he got into occultism and mysticism, etc., quite young, you know. The interest is probably already there by age 11, you know. That's the impressionable... That's when I became a witch.
Well, he did. In his teenage years, the two main influences on Kenneth Anger's work are his homosexuality and his fascination with the supernatural and the occult. In particular, the writings of Aleister Crowley. Now, Sam, I'm going to test your occult knowledge here.
Okay.
Do you know who Aleister Crowley is?
He is the founder of, what's it called, Felmatism?
The Lima.
Look, he's a mystical elder of some variety.
I'm going to give you a one-on-one of Thelema. So Thelema is a classical...
Isn't it like the mask version of Wicca?
It is kind of the mask work. Well, I would argue it's the better version of Wicca, but maybe that just makes me a misogynist. So Thelema is like a classical Greek word for will or desire. Okay. And so the whole purpose of Thelema and Aleister Crowley, said that he invokes a particular deity when he was in Egypt, and that's where he got the whole idea of Thelema from. But the basic idea is that everyone has a true will, so a true purpose in life that the universe is compelling them to do. Because your true will is freedom. And the whole purpose of Thelema is you do rituals and like occult practices in order to discover your true will, which sits in your subconscious mind.
Okay. My ego is processing this as we speak.
Yeah. So it's a fascinating, so it's kind of like a precursor movement, I think, to the hippie movement. Because it's all about like, you know, what's that hippie phrase of like killing the cop in your head or something. It's about like getting rid of all the superficial stuff and then finding out your deeper core and what you're meant to do.
Okay, this sounds like something Charles Manson would have told his followers, but
we've got a Manson, you know, link coming up in the future. So Thelema was a huge influence on Kenneth Anger, and you can see it in his work. He uses the iconography of occultism in a lot of his work. Also important is the Lima's emphasis on sex magic. So,
I can get behind this.
Yeah, Aleister Crowley, when founding the Lima, from the very beginning, emphasized sexuality as something that was that needed to be treated as a sacred act. And they would perform these sex magic rituals where, you know, two people, three people, multiple people would be having sex in an area, and you'd have like ritualistic garbs and candles. It's basically like all the shit that we've been hearing about, like how Hollywood works in their private parties, is basically how Thelema worked. And the whole point of it was, because you're trying to get rid of your ego and show your true self, when you're having an orgasm, everything's like automatic, your most passionate self, so you get an insight into who you're meant to be. So Anger grew up in his teenage years obsessed with the occult and obsessed with the supernatural, but also obsessed with sex. And I think that comes out in his first film that he got a lot of attention for, which was in 1947, when Anger was 20. He was living near Hollywood at the time, and he produced his first short film that gained notoriety for all the wrong reasons in 1947's Fireworks.
Let's just say this got my libido burning. I was, you know, I'll start it again. I was like, Let's just say this one got my libido burning.
I'm going to keep that in because that was
no. Look, this film really did resonate with me, and experiences that some I'm glad I never had, some wish I had, you know.
Look, Kenneth Anger's films are not great to watch when you're in isolation because of COVID-19 and can't have any sexual partners, basically.
It's okay. My left hand did just fine. Let's just say I did. Let's just say a freeze frame was used.
I'm leaving all of that in as well. So in Fireworks, Fireworks first of all starts off with the image of a sailor holding a lifeless body. We then cut to a sleeping man played by Kenneth Anger himself, who wakes up in bed and gets dressed. The dreamer walks through a door and finds himself at a bar where there is a sexy, sexy sailor admiring his muscles. The sailor then attacks him, and then various other sailors start beating the shit out of Kenneth Anger. I'm assuming this is some sort of erotic fantasy that he may have had.
I think it's some kind of erotic play on like repression and, you know, internalized hatred. I'm not even going to call it internalized homophobia, given the time frame.
He is 20 and he's just released a very homoerotic short film. I don't know if he does have internalized homophobia. I think he's ramping up his... I mean, to give you... I'll leave the listeners with some... I won't spoil everything for the listeners, but there is some imagery in this film of like white liquid being poured and fireworks coming out of pants. So there's no subtlety in the sexual imagery.
No. It's definitely channeling some sort of red hot
boner,
pent up passionate desire rage, you know.
And remember, this is 1947. And he produced...
I was actually shocked when I was watching this to see that. But then I wasn't so shocked when I heard about the controversy afterwards. I'm like, that makes sense.
Yeah. So it was released in 1947, as you said, to controversy. Upon the release of the work, Anger was arrested for obscenity charges. Although he was eventually acquitted because the court found that it was art rather than pornography. The thing is, I think Anger... loved this because throughout this entire trial he was claiming that he was actually 17 when the film was shot, just to stir up some of the tension. And you see this throughout his work, that the guy loves a bit of attention. He likes to cause a bit of controversy.
Definitely a provocateur.
In Anger's words, the film was meant to be a symbolic process of death, rebirth, and self-realization. It is heavily influenced by Thelema, although I think most people, when they watch it, just see horny, sexy business that's a bit arty.
I don't know. If I had to summarize it, I'd say it's maybe something to do with like the danger and like temptation of like burgeoning teenage boy sexuality. But you know, I'm not complaining. He was actually 20, so I can watch it guilt-free, knowing that I'm not salivating over anyone.
Well, I don't know about I don't know about the sailors. I wonder what he told those sailors.
Yeah, where did he recruit? That's what I was thinking too when I was watching it. Where did he recruit the cast members from? How did you get? It would be hard to get people to do the things that he was getting the people to do.
I think
in the
I
film
did read
in 2020.
I think I did read somewhere that they were actual sailors, and that was their sailor uniform.
Well, he was obviously very persuasive. That's all I can say.
Maybe it didn't even realize their head in their head that it could be like a sexual thing. I don't know.
Maybe the devil made them do it.
Maybe the devil. Well, yes. Maybe he used his magic. In fact, the release of this film actually resulted in Kenneth Anger striking up a friendship with the sexologist Alfred Kinsey.
Do you want to know what I got on the Kinsey test?
What did you get?
3.2.
Oh, you're barely a homosexual. Thing. I'm definitely like a number one, whatever the like no interest in women are like statues to me.
I think that's a six, but I might be getting it wrong. Maybe it's the other way around.
Anger's later films explored his further interest in the occult, but also his interest in Hollywood. So I'm just gonna briefly note some of these other films. So Pusse moment. I have no idea. 1949. It sounded like pussy. I didn't mean to say it that way.
Well, that, it is about a woman. So, it is. You know, I'd believe that.
It's a fairly, I'm going to say, not that great film. Short film of like a 1920s style flapper getting dressed. And it's clearly...
You being against something starring a woman. How against type?
Yeah, Kinsey Six.
Yeah.
It's meant to be kind of celebrating the symbols of old school Hollywood, which he'll come back to later in life. There was also Rabbit's Moon, which was this fantastical type film where a mime interacts with, the bio describes them as a harlequin, which I'm assuming is some sort of like mythical creature, with a magic...
I think a harlequin's like a clown type thing, right?
Yeah.
It's like a jester.
Yeah, so this mime and this harlequin talking. It's very hard to interpret. There's like a magic lantern and there's the moon. So that's Rabbit's Moon. Also very esoteric, very much like on par with his interest in Thelema and those sorts of things.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It was about midway through in his filmmaking career, or his first run of filmmaking career, in 1963, that he produced his next most infamous film, Scorpio Rising.
I will say, as far as his films that I've seen go, this one is actually, you know, at the bottom of my list.
It's a bit boring.
Maybe there wasn't enough occult in it.
It's a bit boring.
It was cranked up on the eroticism and cranked down on the occultism.
Well, so... it's interesting. I didn't like this as much as some of his other films either. But it's weird because the description makes it think that I would definitely love this just for its shock value. So in Scorpio Rising, an army of gay Nazi bikers make their engines roar and ride their way through sexual and sadistic symbols. And this is all intercut with pop music from Elvis to the Angels playing in the background.
She wore blue velvet. Whoa, whoa. Bluer than velvet was the night. Whoa, whoa. Softer than satin was the light from the stars.
There was some interesting controversy during the opening of Scorpio Rising because there was a lot of Nazi imagery in Scorpio Rising. And so there were protests outside the theater, but not by who you would think. There were actually protests by the American Nazi Party, on the basis that the film, due to its homoerotic undertones, insulted their flag.
Okay, that's not what I was expecting.
The police were also called on site by the Nazis, and the film was removed. It ended up being quite a foundational Supreme Court case in California about whether or not this film was obscenity, and the court found that it wasn't obscenity, and that actually,
I mean, you barely see a flash of a dick. Come on.
Yeah, look, this isn't his most pornographic of films. But just interesting that it was Nazis offended who then called the authorities to censor them, given the current climate, which we were going like, it's just the politics of it is.
I felt like with this film, he was definitely displaying... what would have been considered quite outrageous displays of sexuality a lot more freely. I just think that the eroticism came first in this film and the occultism came second. So that's probably why it doesn't resonate with me as much as some of his other works.
Well, it's interesting. I think that there is an element of... So there's this thing within that Thelema and earlier cult traditions of the importance of symbols, and that if people invest a certain amount of emotion in certain symbols, that's kind of where the magic happens. That's where the change happens. And so I wonder if his use of his transgressive use of Nazi symbols and swastikas and stuff is him trying to do something kind of magical of I'm taking this like fascist symbol, but I'm making it homoerotic. Like that was yeah. playing into, you know, the development of the film. Unsurprisingly, given the timing and given the kinds of liberationist type issues that you see in Anger's films, he got a lot of attention amongst American countercultural icons at the time. And I think this is no more clear than in Anger's 1969 film, Invocation of My Demon Brother.
My personal favorite. I've heard it might be yours
it's
too.
Mine so, as
you know,
well.
For once we're agreeing on something.
It's one of the best things that I've ever watched. I know that's like a big statement, but like there's such particularly there's a couple of different versions of it online. There is a version of it with modern instrumentation on the back of it that I'll maybe put on the link to this podcast episode to it. It makes me feel things, Sam. I feel things. Invocation of My Demon Brother. You can't summarize the imagery as one thing because it's an intercut of various different events happening at once. So there's homoerotic imagery interspersed with performances by the Rolling Stones, images of the Vietnam War.
A really hot albino guy.
A hot albino guy. Naked hippie musician smoking weed out of a skull. Lots of various images played together beautifully, I think. And just to indicate how much of a countercultural icon Anger was at this point, the original synthesizer score was made by Mick Jagger. Mick Jagger obviously appears in the film itself, along with beat poet Lenore Candle, the founder of the Church of Satan, Anton LaVey. And if you want to learn more about the Church of Satan, listen to our Satanism episode. Also in this short film is
Bobby Bosalaya,
who was a member of the Manson family and would go on to kill Gary Hinman, a fellow associate of Charles Manson.
There's some fun facts for you.
So clearly Anger was involved in all of the radical elements of the 60 movements all at one time. And I think knowing that those kind of both the good and the bad of the hippie movement is in this film just kind of adds to its charm. It's sexy, but it also is clearly in the name invoking something. Clearly there's something occult going on that is meant to be achieving something through this short film.
What I found most interesting about it as well is that it was a real precursor for 70s possession horror films. And yeah, so I mean, you know, you can obviously see the very clear influence it has on, you know, like David Lynch, Dario Argento, even like Yoderowski. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, these are like three filmmakers all from different cultural backgrounds. It looks like Kenneth's gotten his, you know, his fangs in all of them.
Yeah, it's had an influence in particular with our kind of pop cultural understanding of what a Satanist is as well and what an occultist is. because, you know, these things existed. You had Thelema, you had the Church of Satan, but the imagery of the skulls and the psychedelic component to it, the mixture of like violence and chaos and cultivating that together, being satanic, is something that is distinctly from Invocation of My Demon Brother. And all other films that came afterwards were kind of mimicking this idea of the kind of like dark side of hippiedom.
Kind of bummed that he never crossed in, over into the feature film world, because I would have loved to see just one, you know, one full length work from him.
I don't know if that
I'd be interested to see.
I think his films were designed to be like gallery films. I don't know how much interest he would have had in something that had a narrative component.
Yeah, obviously, but I feel like a lot of the films that he inspired, I feel like, were definitely style over substance. So I just would have been interested to see what he would have done with some batshit 70s possession film.
At least from the interviews that I've seen with Anger, he seems like a very introspective person, and maybe wasn't seeking out that kind of fame. And in fact, he seemed... The entirety of Anger's work seems to be somewhat of a critique of Hollywood. And I think, as a good segue, this is a good time to start talking about the books that Kenneth Anger has written. So Kenneth Anger is most known for a book called Hollywood Babylon, published in 1959. Now, I don't know how to describe this book other than a kind of a mix of TMZ and, you know, the celebrity gossip TMZ and like rotten.com, because it had images of dead celebrities and crimes and grisly details interspersed with kind of gossipy tales about the sex lives of old Hollywood. So I know some of the things that were included in the original publication were allegations that Charlie Chaplin fathered multiple children to multiple different women. There were leaked excerpts of a diary of Mary Astor, detailing apparently her rich sescapades. There were sexual talks about Mae West having multiple sex partners, and about directors exploiting actors and actresses at a casting couch type situation, and then most infamously images of Jane Mansfield's infamous car accident were first widely publicized in Hollywood Babylon. So
God, no wonder this got a sequel like 25 years later.
Yeah, it's just this cheap and tawdry affair, and caused a lot of controversy at the time. It was originally published in France, but wasn't actually fully released in the US until 1965, because there was a federal ban prohibiting it from bookstores. In 1975, the New York Times famously stated, "If a book such as this can be said to have charm, it lies in the fact that here is a book without one single redeeming merit." So it caused a lot of controversy, this book.
I guess in a way this book kept him going, because in the 80s, when he retired from filmmaking and he was so broke that he apparently had to sell his air conditioning unit, he published a sequel.
He did. He published Hollywood Babylon 2 in the 80s. Which is much shorter and has a lot less scandalous details from what I could tell by skimming through.
But one huge paycheck, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure people would have bought it just for its salaciousness. And I don't know how much Kenneth Anger actually cares about this stuff. I have heard on some modern reviews of this book that this was essentially him doing a bit of a fuck you to the conservative parts of the Hollywood establishment and said, you think I'm depraved? Look how fucking depraved all of you are. And at least some of the things that he says, particularly about like directors and casting couches and people sleeping around, probably had some truth to it. I know some of the most scandalous claims have been proven to be false, and he's just done it just to be a bit of a shit stirrer, which, you know, seems to be part of how,
you can all appreciate
how
that.
Kenneth Anger works. He is alive today, but obviously he doesn't have the internet. Imagine if someone taught him how to use the internet. He would love it.
I would love him as the third window in our Zoom chat right now.
Oh, it'd be great. So as you said, Sam, Kenneth Anger's career took a bit of a downturn in the 80s, and it remained that way well until the 90s, actually. He came back after a long hiatus to release a film called Don't Smoke That Cigarette, which was intercut clips of old films where cigarettes were being smoked. Except I have heard one online rumor, which I don't know if this is correct, but I kind of like it if it is correct, that he's actually stolen this film. Because the film was originally released in the early 1990s as Smoke That Cigarette, and he added Don't to the title, and then he released it as his own film.
Well, look, whatever it takes, you know?
It's
sometimes a man needs a
dollar.
I
feel like that could be art. That's kind of clever, you know? Times change.
Yeah, well, it's what is originality?
Since 1999, he has been producing other little short films, nothing of particular note. He's also been producing ads for various products. So, you know, getting some of that commercial buck. He's finally given up his hippie roots, I think, in old age. But Kenneth Anger is still alive and well. The latest interview that I saw of him, the person interviewing him said that he was furiously cutting out articles of sex scandals in the newspaper that he was going to send to the Kinsey Institute because he wanted to see various aberrant sexual behavior researched. So he's still going strong and still has kept his esoteric interest going. Thank you for listening to the Sinister Sissies podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Sinister Sissies, as well as on Instagram at Sinister_Sissies. You can follow me on Twitter at Jared Bartle, that is Jared with a Y. Sam does not believe in social media still, so you can't follow him on anything, but if you want to pass on a message, just send me a DM.
Or Sinister_Sissies on Instagram.
Oh yes, Sam is in charge of the Sinister Sissies Instagram, so you can get in touch with him.
That's the underwhelming content.
The content's been really good. Follow our Instagram. If you are interested in supporting the show, we would be very appreciative of that. You can subscribe to our Patreon page at patreon.com/sinistersissies. But until next time, stay sinister.